Mercy is unlocked, and we are super excited because we have the Federal Bureau of Investigations report on Martin Luther King Jr. The subject is a current analysis, and it was put out or published or whatever they do on their inside memoing on March 12th, 1968. He died assassinated on April 4th, 1968 at the age of 39. So this was literally put out 20 days before he died. And so the FBI was super fucking looking into his ass.
Yeah, they were doing a full-on
investigation. Assassination and analysis together, because that's what they did, right?
I'm like investigation of who he was.
Yeah, and these documents are not the Trump documents that are going to be released. These ones were actually released way back May 8th, 1994, so not recent at all.
Yeah, and when we get the new ones, we will definitely do an update on this.
Yeah, so this is part one, and we're just going to go over all of what is said in this and what the FBI was looking at and who his accomplices were.
And what kind of stuff he was really into, because the Martin Luther King Jr. that we have all known to grow, like in our history classes and stuff, is not entirely who he was.
Yes, 100%, according to these papers. Now, you posted about some of these papers on our Facebook, mm-hmm. and we had mixed reviews as to, well, would you trust the FBI now? Yeah. Do you trust what they do now? And it's like, well, you know, you might have something there. Like, is what they're saying true, or are the FBI full of shit? And I really want to say that it could be full of shit, all of it.
I mean, we cannot confirm or deny. We're just giving you the information.
And the facts that come out of the FBI document.
And this was actually reviewed by the FBI and JFK Task Force.
Which, by the way, the JFK Task Force is a special group that was assembled by President Kennedy to address a specific issue or policy, like, area. JFK was only president from January 20th, 1961 to November 22nd, 1963. This came out in 1968. So JFK had, like, his team had nothing to do with this, but he did start the whole task force on, like, examining certain things that need to be examined further.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like,
he started it.
So this is called the FBI/JFK Task Force, which you can see here if you are watching the Facebook. So.
And like Jen had said, I did make two reels, basically, where I just read pages 19 and 20. And this is a 20-page document.
So we're just going to go over it and really quick and do our feedback on what we think and and what is said and everything. So really quickly, let me think here. Sorry.
Well,
there's a table of contents. Look at this, guys. Table of actual contents of this whole thing that they have, the special report. It's a whole table of contents. It's crazy.
And all of these documents are available online, and it's from the government.
And they could definitely be accessed since 1994,
yeah,
apparently.
It's not new, but it's
not
new to us.
Information. It's new to us, and because Trump is releasing all these documents, suddenly it's become in the public eye again. I hadn't heard about it until Heather said it, and now I'm seeing it everywhere that, like, maybe things aren't what they always seemed. Maybe, you know, we'll get into it. Let's hop in. Let's hop down the bunny hole. So
we're hopping along.
Yeah, so Martin Luther King Jr. has had a prominent role in the drive for, like, equal rights. And okay, I hate this because they say this all throughout the report, and I really want a different word for it. And I've been battling this
word. N-word?
It's not.
It's an N-word, but it's not the N-word.
No, it's...
It's the other N-word.
Negroes. And I don't want to say that because... And I've been grappling with that with you for the last 2 weeks on how to say and what to say this. Because, like, I don't want to say that word, but it's throughout this whole report.
But, like I told you, the word is...
Black in Spanish. I don't know. Are you even allowed to call black people black nowadays?
I don't know. I'm just saying that negro is how you say black in Spanish.
Like, but that's that a real word. Original bad N word was negro, and then they just shortened it to the other one.
Well, they reference negro.
I don't all even, throughout this thing, and I'm like,
I don't think that that's is that bad to say that. I don't know.
I think it is.
You know what? The way that Facebook has been flagging us for everything under the sun.
Let's just say N-word.
No, that sounds worse.
Okay.
You can't say N-word.
No, you're right.
You're saying the
you're
other.
Right.
That's fucking worse.
You're right. Okay. Oh, my God. You're so right. Okay.
I don't think we're supposed to cuss on here.
So, let's...
redacted. You just say, da-da-da-da, redacted. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
I don't know.
That's what people say. You say redacted.
So for those who don't know, for those that don't know, Martin Luther King Jr. was a very prominent figure that really led the civil rights movement for black people in general and did the whole civil rights movement. What?
I just can't even. I can't even with you.
Why?
I don't know. You're killing me.
Can I not say that now?
No, never. I just can't.
So okay. Done. So, do we need to pause?
No. I'm really tired. I worked a lot today, and I'm, like, getting in giggle fits.
I feel like we should pause really quick.
No, okay. We don't need to pause. Okay. I just think if there's a word that you're not sure of, you just can skip over it or just say redacted. Redacted. That's what they do.
Oh, instead of saying the word. I thought you meant say the word and then say redacted.
No, you just don't say the word.
Oh, censored.
Or you can say, well, they say redacted.
Oh, okay. That's I didn't know that. Say. I'm sorry. I didn't understand. I wasn't following you when you said that. I thought you wanted me to say the word and then say redacted. And I'm like, okay, well, I want to retract before. I thought you were saying retract. I want to retract before I even say it. This is why we don't record at night, guys. It is Friday night at 6:35 p.m., and we missed our Wednesday opportunity.
We never record on Friday, so, and this is why my bedtime.
This is why we don't.
6:30 okay. p.m. on a Friday.
So, this project starts with Washington Spring Project, and it is pretty much saying how Martin Luther King Jr. was the president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the SCLC, which is all throughout this thing. That is like, he's a big deal. He's a president. He did it.
Yes.
Him and 3,000 of his followers were planning to march on Washington, D.C. this spring. And they're saying that he announced that he will lead a massive civil disobedience campaign that will disrupt the normal course of business and, in fact, close down the nation's capital. So the reason for this report is because he is planning to take down the nation's capital. And so the FBI is like, what the fuck? Who is this person? Let's look at this guy. Let's see who he is. So that is the whole point of this whole report, is like, who the fuck is this motherfucker?
It's kind of like an extensive background check.
We like to call it an extensive people researching.
Yes.
EPR. It's not called stalking, but I think the FBI stalked him pretty well. So, he originally wanted it in August 15th in Atlanta, Georgia, but it changed as as we'll move forward. Martin Luther King. Oh, by the way, I would love to say this really quickly. And you know what? We'll get into it in a second. I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself, but I think it's very interesting.
Okay.
His real name. But okay.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah,
it's very interesting. I never knew that before.
I never knew he had a different name.
Yeah, never. So he thought that this massive civil disobedience would be more effective than riots. And he's said, quoted, to disclose the function of a city without destroying it can be more effective than a riot because it can be longer lasting, costly to society, but not wantonly destructive. And I fucking love that. Don't burn down your cities. Don't do all this stuff. This protest, what actually happened, he wanted it for August. It ended up happening March 25th, 1965 in Montgomery, Alabama. They did shut down the Capitol just with marches and walking. Mm-hmm. 5 days, 54 fucking miles, they walked through the streets and they did their shit. Did they burn down buildings? No. Did they fuck up mom and pop shops or any shops? No. This is how you do a fucking peaceful protest. This is how you do a peaceful riot. They rioted in the streets without burning down buildings.
Well, I don't think that's a definition of a riot.
Well, whatever. But that's what in the 60s, that's what they're saying. Whatever.
Yeah.
But all I'm saying is that in 2020, the whole George Floyd thing and all that and like being like, oh, we're for MLK. This is not what he wanted. He didn't want you guys to be smashing in windows of the stores that your neighbor owns. Yeah, you're not smashing in the fucking White House. You're smashing in these mom and pa shops. It's bullshit. I went into my to get glasses in 2020, a few months after this happened, the George Floyd thing happened. And oh my God, they had everything. There was no glasses on display and they had their windows boarded up. And by the way, this was in like a little, like where I go get my glasses done. It's like in a richy part of town or whatever. I don't go to like the Walmart or whatever. And it shouldn't be like that. You know what I mean? I mean, no matter where you are, but for them to do it, which I guess would make more sense. But anyways, well, it would to go after the, but they thought that like they were worried about it.
They're going to want the designer.
They wanted the Oakleys. So they don't even care about civil disobedience. They don't care about what they're going after. They just want to get the good stuff, just like the 1992 LA riots.
They're opportunists and they saw an opportunity.
Yeah.
And whether they're for the movement, whatever movement or not,
they are for getting their fucking hand, their grubby hands on shit.
They're just for looting. Those are just looters.
Yeah.
I don't even think that they are actually, I mean, activists, maybe some of them were, but a lot of it,
whatever. But like burning down buildings and stuff, like what are you doing? You're hurting your own neighborhood.
Yeah, it's pointless.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to do that.
So, anyways, so Martin Luther King Jr. referred to this campaign as the Washington Spring Project and the Poor People's March. Mm. That's what he said it was.
Because he was trying to look out for the underdog?
Yes. That was his plan, mm-hmm. and he wanted legislation to start being favorable to the retracted ward, and he bragged that he will fill up jails of Washington and surrounding towns, so he was saying, like, he knew that this could get violent. He said that he wants it to be a nonviolent demonstration, but it could escalate into violence. He also solicited a lot of other people with him, including Stokely Carmichael of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the SNCC, an extremist, retracted nationalist organization. And Martin Luther King is aware of the possibility of violence because one of his aides proclaimed recently to the press, quote, jail will be the safest place in Washington this spring.
Already anticipating riots.
Yes, and that is exactly why the FBI was looking into him and why this whole report happened.
And they were probably anticipating, like, police brutality also against
them. Yeah, so they're just, at this point, they're just pretty much worried about violence and just everything. The problem herein lies with this whole report that there was a strong communist influence at play. Stanley David Levinson was the only, was just a New York City attorney and businessman. Levinson is, in fact, a shrewd, dedicated communist, according to this report. And he was an advisor to MLK, Martin Luther King Jr. He was actually like the main advisor up until his death. Levinson gravitated towards Martin Luther King Jr. in 1956. And all he was dedicated to doing was advancing his communist goals. And he actively put himself in the center of everything Martin Luther King Jr. was doing. He was a legal counsel in certain matters, suggested speech material for him that we'll get more into later, guided him in regard to acceptance or rejection of various public appearance and speaking commitments. This was his, if you will, puppet master. Levinson even edited most of Martin Luther King Jr.'s book that was called Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community. In fact, Levinson wrote one of the chapters.
So he was the editor.
No, not even edited. Because the publishing company said that they could see the difference. Mm-hmm. They said the author of this book did not write this part, especially this whole big-ass chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So one whole chapter was written by Levinson.
I mean, but that's not uncommon that writers have people write for them.
A ghostwriter.
Yeah.
But they have to be, like, transparent about that.
Do they?
I'm not sure.
I don't think they have to be. I don't, because it's the publishing companies.
The ghostwriter, though, like for Britney Spears and whoever else, or Paris Hilton, the ghostwriter takes their story and, like, puts it in their words in a simpler way or a more fun way, where the ideas and stuff, it was, like, different.
Mm.
It wasn't ghostwriting. It was, like, the publishers know that Britney Spears had a ghostwriter. The publishers knew that Paris Hilton. Martin Luther King Jr. was trying to say this. I wrote this whole book.
I didn't know Britney had a ghostwriter. I thought she just wrote the book.
No, she did. Remember in the prologue.
Oh, okay.
She talked about her ghostwriter.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a ghostwriter. It was just, like, someone who was just, like...
editor?
It wasn't even an editor. It was, like, it'd be, like, me telling you my story and you just going with, just typing everything I'm saying.
Oh, like a dictation. A typist.
Yeah, almost like that. That's why her book is all over the place. Anyways. It would literally be, like, me telling you my life story.
And just typing. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Where was I?
From here? Chaos or community?
Yes. So that was a book that he came and that he wrote. But Stanley Levinson had told Clarence Jones, another advisor to Martin Luther King Jr., that under no circumstances should King be permitted to say anything without them approving it. Which you will see is an ongoing thing that occurs throughout this whole report. Levinson, usually not prepared to make statements without help from... Oh, sorry. Levinson is actively participating in the planning for King's Washington Spring project, which is that Montgomery, what did happen in 1964, I believe. The explosive situation... This was a mix for a perfect storm. So there was a communist influence by these two guys, Jones and Levinson. And then there was the retracted word nationalist advocating violence, giving the Washington Spring Project a potential for an extremely explosive situation. Like, this is just the perfect storm. Shit is going to hit the fan. This is a bad idea, and this is the whole point of why the FBI made this whole report on him. So
it's like the Black Lives Matter.
But different. More, I think. I don't know. Do you think that's the same?
Well, because Black Lives Matter is how when they were, like, burning everything down, too.
Yeah, but they're not burning anything down. They never did. It was always very peaceful. But they were worried.
But no, that's what the FBI was worried
FBI
was going to happen.
FBI was worried that that's
what was
going to happen.
It was
going to
turn into, like, that type of a situation.
But, yeah, but they didn't even have anything to... Yeah, but it didn't. They're good. So, FYI, Martin Luther King Jr. was born on January 15th, 1929 in Atlanta, Georgia. And his name at birth was Michael Luther King Jr.
Michael.
What the fuck? In 1935, so 6 years later, they were like, oh, just kidding, your name is Martin.
Well, he decided to change his name to Martin then.
When he was six?
Oh, it wasn't when he was an adult?
No, he was fucking 6 years old. What, he wanted to be a boy too? We doing that?
Wait, what?
The whole transgender thing. Like, being like, oh, they can choose their gender at the age of four. What, he changed his name because he wanted to at six? Like, no.
Well, his parents must have chosen. Maybe they were torn between two names.
Well, and then even that, would he still be considered a junior at this point? Because now he's not a junior. His dad's name was Martin. So now that takes away his junior.
No, they changed it to Martin. So his dad's name was Michael.
Oh, his dad's name was Michael.
No, I don't know if his dad's name was Michael. Was his dad's name Michael?
No, his dad's name was Martin. Maybe that's why, because they wanted...
So it didn't take it away, it added to it.
Yeah.
It made more sense.
Fucking weird. Anyways, so he was actually... Martin Luther King Jr. was super educated. He had an AB degree in 1948 from Morehouse College. He went to seminary school. He had a bachelor of divinity degree in 1951 and did graduate work at Boston University, where he secured a PhD degree in 1955. So he was super well educated. He then was offered to be a pastor of two Baptist churches in the East and teaching posts in three colleges. And so he decided to pastor at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. And he founded the Montgomery Improvement Association. In March of 1957, he founded the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, that SCLC that I had been talking about earlier. There it is. So he was 28 years old when he founded this. That's so young. Yeah, what were you doing when you were 28?
I was home with a baby.
I was not. I definitely not a pastor with a PhD.
I had one baby at 28.
I did have my bachelor's degree by then. Yay! Hadn't thought of anything past that. Like, that's crazy. So, at the time of this report, he was still the president of the SCLC. And he's also the co-pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church of Atlanta, Georgia. So, that's his background. All of a sudden now, Stanley Levison came to Martin Luther King, and when Martin Luther King Jr. gained the national attention, he was like, he's like, Stanley Levison is like a bug to the little lights, like a fame. He's just like
moth.
A moth to the blue light, just like, ooh, and they still go no matter what. And he was known in King's group as the assistant chief. So he was by his side. It'd be like you. Like if I became somebody famous and I was like, and you were just telling me in my ear what to say, tell me.
You know? I did give you the report.
My God.
It's all coming together. Yeah.
I'm just the face. So, and then in 1961, Martin Luther King Jr. Put him as assistant treasurer of the SCLC. But the problem here being that before Levison was part of Martin Luther King Jr.'s crusade to civil rights, he led a double life for the Communist Party USA, which is the CPUSA, which we'll be talking about later. And he was the fundraiser for the CPUSA. He was entrusted with raising and handling secret funds for the party and used some of these funds to finance his own activities. What do we call that again? I forgot.
Embezzlement?
That's the one.
Theft? Fraud?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the one. And this motherfucker was a lawyer or attorney or some shit, right? Remember?
Oh, better call Sal. Saul. I know. I always say Saul. I know it's Saul, but...
So, all of a sudden, Levinson had these great ideas. Let's bring this guy
Can
in.
Can I just say Levinson? Levinson.
But there's no N.
Yeah, son.
You wanted Levinson.
Levinson.
Well, you were saying Levinson.
I know. I added
You're adding N's.
I know.
That's like...
That's what I think it sounds like.
So, anyways, through him, all of a sudden, he's like, hey... Let's bring in Hunter Pitts Odell. And guess who that was? That was a former national committee member of the Communist Party USA that was employed by CSCLC, which is what was
Martin Luther King
Jr.'s
MLK.
Non-profit organization. So Levinson had recommended Odell, and King was well aware that Levinson and Odell had major communist affiliations, and Levinson in February 1962 passed the word on to Gus Hall, and now he was the general secretary of the CPUSA, and he said, quote, King is a wholehearted Marxist who has studied Marxism, believes in it, and agrees with it, but because of his being a minister of religion, does not dare to espouse it publicly. So, pretty much, Martin Luther King, they're saying that Martin Luther King Jr. was a communist and couldn't put it out there publicly because, like, that's bad, and they have to keep face and just promote him. And if you didn't know, communism... According to some recent documents that I can't find now. Where'd my documents go? I only have a whole page of them here.
What documents?
The one that I wrote on the back of all sorts of...
Did you write on mine?
No. I've lost documents. Anyways, so pretty much a communist, if you didn't know,
had everything down.
I know I did, but it's fine. So pretty much what a communist is, if you don't know, it is somebody who was made by, it was a theory that was brought on by Karl Marx. So if you're a Marxist, that means that you're a part, that you're like believing in the communism ideology where everybody is equal. Everybody has communal property. Not one person owns anything. And everybody just works towards the greater good of humanity, which sounds great. Except that if you can't work, then you still get the same amount as everybody else who is working. And everybody just kind of puts in their fair share, which I believe only works with small communities. But as a nation of, like, I don't know, a million people, it won't work. So that's the problem with that. There is no rich. There is no lower class. There is no nothing. Everybody is equal, which sounds great. And trust me, my core memory is asking my dad, like, why can't we all just, like, work and da-da-da-da? And I explained the whole thing when I was about six, and he said, you just described communism, sweetie. And I was like, what's that? And he's all, you'll figure it out later, but you don't want a part of it.
And then some examples of nations that are considered communist would be China, Vietnam,
Cuba and North Korea,
Laos.
Yes.
I think that's all that we know of.
Currently. That is currently communist. So if you would like to go live in North Korea, that is what they're saying Martin Luther King Jr. wanted, which is crazy. So Martin Luther King was obviously, like, super concerned with the communist label, and he didn't want it to be, like, pinned on him. So, he wanted to do everything possible to have any friendship toward the Soviet Union. He just wanted it all to be good. And King had been described within the CPUSA, remember the Communist Party of United States of America, as a true, genuine Marxist-Leninist, quote-unquote, from the top of his head to the tips of his toes. The feeling within the CPUSA at that time was, and still is, that King definitely follows a Marxist-Leninist line, Which I can believe that because so many people want that. It sounds good on paper. Let's have everybody equal, humanity. You're the same as me. We're all the same. But the problem is that then you get the lazy people that won't work. And then what do? Just boot them out?
No, I think everybody's
kill them.
Everybody would be required to work.
And then that would become 1984, George Orwell, where you're required to work.
Well, look at North Korea.
Yeah.
It's like a dictatorship. They don't have any rights.
Own anything. You're not allowed to own anything because it's communal property. So I can just get into your car and just leave. Oh, no, I can't because we're all in the same car. Who has a car? Nobody. Because we're in 15-minute cities. It's getting worse the more I'm talking. Okay, so anyways, the newspaper found out that King was a part of this communist backing. And he was forced to get rid of Hunter Pitts Odell in October of 1962. And King still tried to hide Odell within his organization. So he still had him with him as being an advisor. He just kind of like hid him in the back skirts instead of being treasurer and all these other high up positions.
So he didn't really get rid of him.
He never got rid of him because he was still there until July 1963 when King finally fired him only because of the emotional public response to finding out that he was still part of this. Mm-hmm. The winter of 1967, there was an issue of quote-unquote freedom ways, which is self-described as a review of the retracted freedom movement, and it lists Odell as associate managing editor. So Freedom Ways was actually a CPUSA-initiated and CPUSA-supported publication espousing the communist viewpoint of redacted problems. Do you want to say anything? Oh, I thought you were, like, breathing to say something.
I was fighting for my life because I feel like I need to cough, so I keep going... But I'm trying to be quiet because you're talking, so I'll just get a drink of water now.
Perfect. please die quieter. So Martin Luther King Jr. actually spoke at a rally that was honoring communists. He spoke to 1,000 people on February 23rd, 1963 at Carnegie Hall in New York City. And it was actually sponsored by Freedom Ways. And it was celebrating the 100th anniversary of the birth of W.E.B. Du Bois, famous retracted civil rights.
Redacted
civil rights crusader who joined the Communist Party at age 93. So he was probably kind of losing it when he did join it. Jack Odell, which, oh, by the way, doesn't that ring a bell of Hunter Odell? But that's okay. Was listed as one of the speakers at this affair. And then the following day, Levison confided to Clarence Jones that King performed very badly at the Freedom Ways rally. He commented, quotes, "King has never read anything as badly and as though he did not understand what he was reading." Which is crazy because this is his, advisor. Yeah. So it would be, the advisor of Biden being like, oh, fuck, we fucked up putting this as our person, you know, or Trump as our person to talk for us. A former communist advisor, one of them was Bayard Rustin, and he said that he had to let Rustin go because of problems arising from his homosexual activities. Rustin was arrested in 1946 in New York and in Pasadena in 1953 for engaging in an act of sexual perversion of a homosexual nature, and he admitted to it, and he had to serve 60 days in jail. Did you know that in California it was illegal to be gay, lesbian, whatever, until 1976? So if we were outside and we were, making out, they would have arrested us in 1965. Mm-hmm. Do you know that when Brad was born, that if his mom was lesbian, she'd be arrested, or his dad was gay? That's insane. It's like in Brad's lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. I never knew it was actually illegal.
I mean, but how many of those laws did people actually follow? I guess they did. Because there's a lot of weird laws that are like old laws.
Okay,
but
it looks like
they got arrested.
Eisenhower actually wrote the law to make it illegal to employ like homosexuals at federal jobs. Now I understand why my dad, he was so like, oh, they're a homosexual. Like that whole like weird word, like,
oh,
that twang, like it's, oh, like,
cause they were making such a big deal about it.
Yeah. And the twang that they would say when they would say, like, it wasn't like, oh, you're gay, lesbian, whatever. The homosexual, like the way the twang of it.
That would be compared to now would be transgender. The stigma that people have or had.
Do we not use transgender anymore? Oh my God, have I turned into my dad?
No, they use it. I'm just saying that like the way that people felt about people being gay or homosexual is like the same as how
like,
they
like, is homosexual say, even like a real word anymore? Does anybody ever say that?
I don't even
know
if you're allowed to say that. Like, I don't even know what people say. I think you just say gay.
Right? Like, I think so too. I don't know. But anyways, I couldn't believe that. I like Googled it to be like, wait, he went to jail for that? Like, wait a minute. Reverse. And I had to like Google, when, like, was it ever illegal? And it was. I can't believe that that was actually illegal. Like, could you imagine?
I can.
Well, because you're older.
God. No, it's not that. It's because I think it's the same as the way people look at transgender people.
But it was never illegal to be transgender.
But now it's illegal to have all these surgeries and do
when
all these
when you're
things.
15, you can't have a tattoo either. Do you think in 30 years it's going to be cool to, like, have a tattoo? You think they're going to let you have tattoos when you're 10?
Probably.
Maybe.
I don't know. I just don't think it's that weird that it was illegal.
I can't believe that. No wonder they're fighting.
I'm not saying that I agree that it should be legal.
No, but no wonder they're fighting for their rights.
Illegal.
I would fight for my rights, too. Like, all of a sudden, I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't know that it was actually illegal. I'm just caught up on that.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait to tell you. I was, like, bursting, and I didn't want to tell you until now. I guess I should have, so we could have this conversation before it was, like, here.
No, it's okay, like, because I just, the way that you said that you, the way your dad would say it, like, the with a little whatever.
Yeah, like a weird twang.
That's how people say transgender, like, it's the same shit.
It's the whole country thing, I think, because the way you said it had a country twang, and my dad grew up in Missouri. Like, the way that he was... homosexual, like, oh, well, she's a homosexual, like,
I've never heard.
Have you never heard my dad say it like that?
I've never heard your dad say homosexual, no.
Oh my God.
I don't think we've
ever. I wish that he was still alive. He would die with this podcast.
I don't think
he would re-die with this podcast. He'd be on it every day. We should have made a podcast while he was alive. He would be so canceled. But get so famous doing it.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, anyways, on to other things.
I don't even know anymore. I just don't know.
So pretty much this part of the FBI file just goes all into the inner workings of everybody that was involved in Martin Luther King Jr.'s, you know, who backed him, who told him what to do, his advisors, all these things. And they were all part of the communist clubs, like various communist clubs, communist organizations. They were just all communists.
For every time we say communist, redacted, transgender, like all, I think these are all like FBI, like, this video is gonna get flagged. Like, it's if you're watching this now, this might be your only chance
to ever see us again,
because I feel like these all words are gonna flag something.
So, so some of the members were Lawrence Reddick, Bayard.
Riot.
Reddick. I said Reddick. Oh, no, I know. Before I'm just her. Bayard, Rustin, Clarence Jones, and Harry Watchell. And. Stop. You're making me laugh.
I didn't do anything.
I can't even think now. So, pretty much, they wanted to hide all the associations. Martin Luther King Jr. wanted to hide all associations with Stanley Levison because suddenly, like, it's coming out that he is associated with all of these communist parties. And this is all prior to October 1966. He was trying to be like, nope, I have nothing to do with this, da-da-da-da, like, I'm done. Well, get this. Clarence Jones married Ann Aston Warder Norton on June 3rd, 1956. She, and in, oh my gosh, I can't even. Okay, so, and she is the daughter of deceased publisher William H. Norton. Between 1947 and 1950, she was identified as a Communist Party club member at Sarah Lawrence College. In the early 1950s, she was also active in the Labor Youth League. On April 5th, 1955, she was observed as the driver of the station wagon, which was used to transport Communist Party underground leaders in connection with an official Communist Party meeting. In 1956, she was described by a self-admitted communist as a hardcore communist. So, pretty much, he was keeping some communist fucking people around him. Then all of a sudden, Martin Luther King won the Nobel Peace Prize, October 1964.
Well, Jenna,
what?
Birds of a feather flock together.
Yes. He was only 35 years old, Baptist minister, and won the fucking Nobel Peace Prize. On November 24th, so a month later, he contacted Jones and asked Jones and Levison, and among others, to submit 5-minute speeches. Want to know why? Of course you do. So then that way, he could use the best speech to present at the Nobel Peace Prize award ceremony. Because he couldn't write for himself, because he didn't write for himself. And he was just going to select the best material from the speeches. So to... two of the previous members, Cordy T. Vivian, Randolph Blackwell, and then it just goes on to list a bunch of names that had communist affiliations that were all key people in the SCLC, which Martin Luther King, remember, he founded and was president of.
Yeah, so
when he was like 28 years old.
He made sure that everybody aligned with his values.
Yes, and mainly
his ideology.
Mainly it was Levison, Jones, and Watchell that were like the biggest influence on Martin Luther King Jr. And they had a CPUSA party line that was... It was quoted, big business attacks on the rights of labor are continuing. In order to defeat this offensive, organized labor assisted by communists must launch a counter crusade, which can succeed only if it is based on the united action of the entire trade union movement. So they're trying to, like, stir the pot. Stir. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So then also the communists had recognized the error of their ways by proclaiming that the communist program for self-determination of the retracted in the Black Belt area of the South had been discarded. May 1961, the communist newspaper, The Worker, stated, "Communists will do their utmost to strengthen and unite the retracted movement and bring to it the backing of the working people." So they're trying to get unions going, pretty much. But they're only looking at the, like, retracted areas, right?
Mm-hmm. Their demographic is
only
African Americans.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because it's MLK, and that's who he is fighting for.
Well, then suddenly, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 happened. It passed from Congress. And suddenly, Martin Luther King Jr. is no longer newsworthy. He's not on the front page. He's all done. He did his thing. Cool. You're done. Like, and he wasn't mainstream. Nothing. Well, at the same time, it's because the Vietnam War started.
Yeah.
And the Gulf of Tonkin incident was on August 2nd, 1964. So the United States was more active in Vietnam, and the activities in Vietnam were now more important news than this whole civil rights freedom movement, which was already passed by Congress. So we're already done. Civil rights movement, 1964, we're done. Moving on. Except that Levinson couldn't handle that. He wanted Martin Luther King Jr. on the forefront of everything. So he's like, you know what? Fuck this shit. We're going to put you on the forefront again. We're going to have you, Martin Luther King Jr., you, sir, are going to be the spokesperson for foreign aid and foreign everything else. So we want to do a massive movement to force the United States government to change its foreign and domestic policies. So it went from, like, civil liberties, like, here, civil rights, to, like, world rights. And so they just tried to stay in the forefront, which with having Martin Luther King Jr. just keep on being like, we want peace in Vietnam. On August 12, 1965, Martin Luther King Jr. said that he was going to appeal it personally, write letters, personally talk to the president, Ho Chi Minh of North Vietnam. In conference, he wrote letters to the leaders of South Vietnam, Soviet Union, United States, everybody. So he's still being in the forefront. They're still pushing him to say, hey, you're still part of this. And this was all engineered by Bayard Rustin and Harry Watchell. And then they met, they wanted to push him more into the Vietnam War, and this would cast an image of King as a great moral leader and extend his influence beyond the civil rights movement. Meanwhile, a newspaper sent King 12 questions to answer, which would clarify his position on Vietnam. When he received these questions, he was like, fuck. Excuse me, Levinson. Can you, like, help me answer these?
Surprise, surprise.
And in September 1965, his top advisors and him all had a meeting, and they were like, okay, look here. We're just going to avoid the Vietnam thing. Let's backtrack a bit. Fuck, we fucked up. This is a bad idea. My bad. So, in early 1966, King was lamenting to Watchell, and Harry Watchell was, like, a huge fan, and now he was just, like, all disappointed with Martin Luther King. He's like, what the fuck? Like, you're a huge national figure. Why is this, like, what are you doing now? Go fix the, like, he wanted that, he reminded King, quote, when we went into this Vietnam thing, we decided that he who controls the purse strings doesn't control our philosophy. That is what Watchell said to King. So the bombing of North Vietnam happened in February 1966. Newspapers, press are coming after Martin Luther King Jr. being like, what the fuck? We want a statement. We want a statement. We want a statement. King finally was like, okay. He was, it was agreed that King would say that he was deeply impressed by the large number of senators who called for a cessation of the bombings, but, and he wanted it to be like, there's no more bombings, let's get rid of the bombings, all this shit. They had a whole conference in the spring of 1966. It was a two-day conference to figure out a draft of the resolution on the Vietnam War. While there, they adopted a resolution calling on the government to desist aiding the military junta in Vietnam and to seriously consider a prompt withdrawal. In May 1966, Martin Luther King Jr. went to, quote unquote, Face the Nation, which, did you know that was a TV show then? In the 60s?
No.
That's like a thing right now. No. Face the Nation.
I've never seen Face the Nation.
It's on like CNN or Fox or something. I don't know. I hear it every so often.
I've never heard of it.
Okay. So anyways, Columbia Broadcasting System, Face the Nation. He went on that. And he was questioned on the Vietnam War. And Jones had advised King to use the Southern Christian Leadership Conference resolution on Vietnam as his text. And that he should also point out how unfair it was that retracted were shouldering a heavier burden in the war and that more retracted were in combat than other Americans. Which I don't even know if that's true or whatnot, but I would imagine that that would have no, right? Like, I don't know. Back then, who knows?
So, I mean, they would just have to
they
look at the numbers, I guess, yeah. And they'd have to look at how many of different races were, basically, they're saying that there was more African Americans that were
on the front lines yeah. than anybody else.
So they're basically but it was all, saying,
like, draft stuff. Like, yeah. they didn't, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the numbers were. We'd have to look it up. And
so Martin Luther King Jr. was supposed to be this face of the Vietnam War, being like, okay, we're going to stop this. We're going to, like, stop the bombing and negotiate and blah, blah, like, all peace and shit. Well, then, December 1966, he agreed that he was in discussion with Leveson and agreed that that Martin Luther King Jr. must reiterate during his testimony that the war in Vietnam is standing in the way of implementation of any of his civil rights projects and is open invitation to confusion, chaos, disruptions, and riots. So pretty much because the Vietnam War was going on, it was fucking with his, like, civil rights movements, and that is how Leveson was going to push Martin Luther King Jr. back into the spotlight. Mm-hmm. That was his way of getting him back.
He was going to try to catapult him.
Yes. So, he spoke critically of the war in Vietnam, and then late February 1967, there was, quote-unquote, the Nation magazine concerning the problems of rejecting American power. And this time Martin Luther King Jr. was obviously still very pissed off that the United States was even still part of Vietnam. He just expressed his anti-war sentiments and I keep saying your turn. So, over the years, I'll just keep going. Over the years, a number of individuals who have been employed at one time or another by the Nation in editorial and writing capacities have been identified with the communist movement. So, even that the Nation magazine or newspaper, whatever publication that was part of the communist movement, which is probably why Leveson wanted him to be interviewed by them and such. So, that way, they would talk to him as
well. It's just more propaganda.
Yes,
there's just more propaganda.
So he went on to make more speeches about his just not being okay with Vietnam, and the he just wanted to mobilize religious opinion against the war. And he met with the top advisors. And he kept meeting with his top advisors, and he...
What?
Pretty much what happened was that suddenly they were like, his top advisors were like, fuck you. We're all done with this shit. You are no longer going to talk about Vietnam War. You can make statements, but you are not going to be the headliner boy for this shit anymore. That's pretty much what happened. So then, all of a sudden, after this, they took him off the front lines of, like, being like, Martin Luther King Jr. said this about the Vietnam War, and this about the Vietnam War, and this, and he's against it, and try to bring him back to the forefront. They're like, okay, we have a better idea. Let's put you as president. So, on April 19th, 1967, Leveson and Wachtell decided, hey, let's start the pacifist group.
Pacifist.
And then they would start their own. You know, we have Democrats, Republicans. They're going to be the pacifist. Mm. They're going to be like the peace group. And that is how you are going to run for presidency. Perfect. So, this time, instead of going for like, hey, civil rights, hey, fuck the Vietnam War, they decided to do a peace movement. And this was May 1967. So Martin Luther King Jr. would talk on Vietnam on occasion to various groups, but that would be like the extent of his involvement. So they were just like, we're all done, no more. Like, you are now running for president of the United States.
He's trying to appeal to the hippies, okay?
That's probably what it was.
Yeah, that's the hippie. That's the late '60s, early '70s.
So stupid because Levison just wanted King to advocate a program with dramatic qualities similar to the Works Project administration of the 1930s to employ jobless youth. So he's now, yes, the hippies, you're right. Like, yeah, that's exactly it.
There are so many people that were against the Vietnam War.
They were. That was the one with the flower thing, the flower.
Flower power, love not war. All of that. Yeah, love not war, flower power. Remember Forrest Gump?
Yeah.
Remember that? Yeah. When he came back and he was in the wheelchair and all that?
So it's like,
that was Vietnam War.
So Levison thought that Martin Luther King Jr. was stupid as shit.
Mm. Well, he couldn't write anything, so.
Yeah, no, but he was like, this guy is stupid, he's like dumb, and he literally used him as a poster child. He just used him for a what he puppet. Had. I would love to know the race of Levison. Wouldn't it be so funny if he was white?
Well, I'm sure we can look it up.
I know. See. Now I'm curious. That would be so funny. I'm looking him up. I didn't even think about that until right now because that would be fucking hilarious.
Well, because normally we don't think about the race, but this is about race. Because this is Martin Luther King, so.
He was fucking white! No!
That's Stanley.
Yeah, oh, Levison.
Yeah,
that's
him, yeah.
He's fucking white. Look, you guys. He is motherfucking white.
Jeez. Well, that's not a bad thing. But
he was Jewish, too. It's getting worse. Well, not worse. Just, like, how white can you be?
Well, then they're going to say that's the Zionists that are controlling everything. Because everybody already say that it's, yeah.
I didn't even think about what race Levison was throughout all of this. All of a sudden, I had this, like, great, like, he doesn't give a fuck about the civil rights. He just wants to be, right behind pulling all the little strings. He's probably right-hand man to the fucking Hitler. He's probably Hitler's kid.
Well, we don't know that. You
can't. We don't, but I'm just saying.
Kind of going off the deep end.
I am. I've gone down the rabbit hole. Oh, my gosh. That's so crazy. Okay. Sorry. Okay, breathe. So he wanted on August 15th, 1967, Martin Luther King Jr. said that he urged a new massive civil disobedience, which would include general strikes, school boycotts, and a camp-in at Washington, D.C. All of this would force Congress to take action to improve the lot of the retracted, the African-American population. So now he is getting a little more, not violent, but he is less of, let's make sure it's all peaceful, to, or we're going to shut this shit down.
Mm-hmm.
And before he was like, well, if other people are going to shut this shit down, it is what it is. And now he's like, no, we're shutting this shit down.
He's just trying anything that he can.
Okay, well, the problem herein lies is for him to have this whole big ass riot thing, how are they getting the finances? Well, there is, they wanted to raise $1.5 million in less than a year. And during that year, they raised $901,000. Their expenses were $859,000 with a net income of $41,000. They tax dodged the fuck out of that, which is, what is that called again?
Embezzlement?
That's the one. So...
fraud.
The SCLC, which, by the way, Martin Luther King Jr. was the president of, set up foundations to serve as tax-exempt organizations that would solicit funds for the SCLC. To this end, the American Foundation on Nonviolence of New York City and the Southern Christian Leadership Foundation of Chicago, Illinois were established. As money is needed by a CLC, Harry Watchell reportedly funnels the money from the American Foundation of Nonviolence to SCLC.
So, oh, funnel. That's the money laundering.
Yes. Yeah. Money laundering. That's the word I've been looking for this whole time. So, Merrill Lynch.
I mean, it's all of the above, really.
Yeah. Well, Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith, that was a stock brokerage firm. We know Merrill Lynch, gave $15,000. Edward Lamb Foundation gave stock markets worth $6,000. Ford gave them $230,000 to train retracted ministers in 25 cities throughout the nation.
And you have to think this is in 60s. So these are
like
this dollar 40, amount. 50,
like 30% more, if not 60% more. Yeah, here. Inflation. So then he also got from Governor of New York, Nelson Rockefeller, gave $25,000.
Surprise, surprise.
For the Gandhi Society for Human Rights. And guess who was the president of that?
Gandhi?
Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, I'm all Gandhi.
Nope. 1967, Harry Belafonte gave $10,000. It's like all these people.
Oh, yeah. He was a well-known performer.
Belafonte. Yes. And then Anne LaBoise Farnsworth as Mr. Peter Farnsworth, an heiress to the Clark Thread fortune. Whatever the fuck that is. Donate $50,000. And then she also donated $100,000. So she's $150,000 deep in whatever this Thread fortune is. And then in the government gave $400,000. $61,000, $13,000, $48,000, all for these different government-funded things.
What about the $4 million loan?
Oh, yes, I forgot. The $4 million loan from the FHA. So that way, Martin Luther King Jr.'s SCLC's involvement in a slum clearance program in Chicago, Illinois. So they wanted to, the FHA wanted to help out with that.
Yeah.
So it gave them $4 million. Of course, they're taken off their top.
And how much is that really going to the people that live in the slums for better housing?
No, exactly.
Stuff?
They're taking off the top to pay themselves. I'm telling you, we have to open a nonprofit. Anyways. Telling you guys all my secrets. So the Washington Spring Project. Harry Belafonte, of approximately 60 individuals who contributed 1,000 or more to Martin Luther King Jr.'s nonprofit, had a meeting there in Harry Belafonte's home. And of these people, there were Governor Miss Nelson Rockefeller, Marion Stephen Rockefeller, and Franklin D. Roosevelt III. Okay, here's the deal. This is where it gets interesting. So, early March 1968, Levison was continuing his efforts to raise funds for the Washington Spring Project. He was quite pleased with his current results and notified Clarence Jones that he had sent out a mailing to 80,000 individuals who have contributed to King's organization in the past 2 years, soliciting funds. Levison remarks that the returns were running ahead of last year's response, with 15,000 being received in one day, which is like a shit ton now. So, this is where, like, this is fucking crazy. So, with the funds that were received, Martin Luther King Jr. held the first of two workshops in Miami, Florida in February 1968 to train African-American ministers in urban leadership. One of those people in attendance later expressed his disgust with the behind-the-scenes drinking, fornication, and homosexuality that went on at the conference. Several African-American and white prostitutes were brought in from the Miami area, an all-night sex orgy was held with these prostitutes and some of the delegates in attendance. One room had a large table in it, which was filled with whiskey. The two African-American prostitutes were paid $50 to put on a sex show for the entertainment of guests. A variety of sex acts deviating from the normal were observed. Was this like the first ever freak off on FBI files or what?
I don't know. I was thinking it was like an Illuminati initiation or something.
I was just thinking of Diddy. P. Diddy is like...
He's the original P. Diddy?
Yeah. Well, that's what you said. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, it sounds like he... But he... It sounds like these prostitutes were... They were paid, so they were willing. The thing with Diddy is they were drugged and they were not even aware of what was happening in some of the cases. Yeah. Allegedly.
So it says that this activity is not new to King and his associates. As early as January 1964, King engaged in another two-day drunken sex orgy in Washington, D.C. Many of those present engaged in sexual acts, natural as well as unnatural. What the fuck does that mean? What's unnatural sex acts?
I think they're talking about something that can be considered homosexual.
Okay, I was thinking bestiality. Okay.
Oh, it could be. Who knows? We don't know. We weren't there. So we don't know. It could be anything okay.
Well,
that could
natural
be...
as well as unnatural for the entertainment of onlookers.
Well, just because it keeps saying homosexual.
Yeah, yeah. And that was illegal so then.
That's what I think they mean by unnatural. But
one of
know.
The females shied away from engaging in an unnatural act. King and others of the males present discussed how she was to be taught and initiated in this respect.
So basically raped or forced? Taught?
I guess.
How do you teach somebody to want to do something they don't want to do?
Throughout the ensuing years and until this date, King has, until the date of this report, obviously, King has continued to carry on his sexual aberrations secretly while holding himself out to public view as a moral leader of religious conviction. It was learned on February 1968 from a very responsible L.A. individual in a position to know that King has been having an illicit love affair with the wife of a prominent African-American dentist in Los Angeles, California, since 1962. He believes King fathered a baby girl born to this woman in as much as her husband is allegedly sterile. The child resembles King to a great degree, and King contributes to the support of this child. What?
Yeah, that's a smoking gun right there, because if he contributes financially to the child, it's almost like he's
admitting guilt.
He's accepting the child as his.
He's accepting the child. He calls this woman every Wednesday and frequently meets her in various cities throughout the country. The individual who reported this is himself a prominent African-American who is related by law because he's married to, he's the husband of the mistress. He advised
No, it just says related by law to King's mistress.
Oh, it could be the brother-in-law.
It could be her brother. It could be
he advised he has known King since 1960 and refers to him as a hypocrite. He also reported that King is having illicit love affairs with three other women, one of whom is Joan
Baez,
the nationally known folk singer, the prominent African-American who furnished the information said he was appalled that a man of King's low character could cause so much trouble for both African-Americans and the government. As can be seen from the above, it is a fact that King not only regularly indulges in adulterous acts, but enjoys the abnormal by engaging in group sexual orgies.
So, not only is he a communist, he didn't write any of his...
He's a plagiarist, he's a communist, a plagiarist, and sexist. And a homosexual.
And a fraud.
Do you think that the FBI is right in their findings, or do you think they're just, like, being grr?
Well, I mean, the fact that this wasn't even made public until 1994, they weren't doing it to sway the public's opinion about him. Mm-mm. It was their own personal...
vendetta, if anything. It would be their own personal, like, vendetta.
I don't think it was a vendetta. I think they were just trying to get information, and this is information they found. Why? They weren't making it public, so why
Unless they were putting their personal...
spin on it?
Yeah. Like, trying to push them in a certain way for their personal spin. Yeah.
But, I mean, if he founded that organization and there was, like, 10 names and they were all communists, I mean, that's enough proof right there that he aligned with the communists.
Yes. But a lot of people, I think, align with the Communist Party and don't even realize they do because they all want, like, peace and shit.
I know, but that's not what you were saying. Yeah. You were saying, like, do you think they skewed it? Well, no, the communist thing, no, I don't think they skewed it because he founded that. Yeah. And then all those names, they were all found to be communists.
True. Okay, next.
And then if there was eyewitnesses at these freak-offs or whatever, I'm sure there was prostitutes they interviewed, like, multiple people. It sounds... orgy is, like, how many people is an orgy considered? Like, 5, 6? I don't know what an orgy number
is. Well, a gang is 4 or more, so...
So, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, there'd be multiple witnesses.
Yeah.
So... I mean, I don't think that that's necessarily wrong, what sex acts they were doing, and, like, whether it was, like,
so indecent, do you think that,
or whatever,
he,
I don't know. I
do
mean,
you think that he has...
If they're all consenting adults, I don't really care about the orgy part. I don't care if he's homosexual, but because it was against the law...
It was illegal! How crazy is that? Let's talk about that for a second.
I know. The fact that it was illegal...
That is insane.
It's an insane one, and two... I can see why they would be highlighting it so much, mm-hmm. because it broke the law, and it's the FBI.
And so they're trying to just prove their point that it was illegal and things are bad.
And then...
do you think that his daughter, do you think that she's still around an illegitimate child?
That's...
Do you think that...
The money
where
laundering?
Where she is and all that?
Well, it doesn't name her, so it doesn't out her.
It doesn't out any of it.
So we don't have any way of... Well, maybe we do now.
Yeah,
I don't
let
know.
Me see.
We might be able to. The money laundering, I mean, they have receipts, right? They have receipts.
Yeah, for that, I don't know.
It just says a prominent dentist.
Yeah.
So that could be anybody.
No, yeah, everything
There's
is...
There's no way.
No, yeah. Well...
And then the fact that, I'm going to say Levinson, because I'm sorry, that's how I say his name. He was his right-hand man, and he wrote everything, and he...
That's crazy, all the plagiarism.
He was an editor. Well, I don't know if it's considered plagiarism. If you have somebody write a speech for you...
Yeah.
And you're editing it together, because usually you're together working on it. It's not plagiarism, because you're working together on it.
But, okay, you're right. Except that he's saying that he wrote it and that it's his, and he's so I guess it's like falsification. Like he's presenting himself as a different
person.
No,
because it's in like an advisor. Because like even I don't think that's plagiarism.
It's not plagiarism. It's a wrong word, but it's under false pretenses.
Not really, because even presidents and people that they have people that advise them, and they might. Write things for them. They have publicists. They have media management teams and stuff that do all of that for them. And they just go, okay, you read this statement, you know, and then you read it. It's not plagiarism. You have obviously they have to agree to what they're saying. So you had to have some sign off on it at some. It's some, you know, he could veto it, I'm sure. He could say, like, I'm not saying that. Like, I don't, that doesn't align with what I believe. But I think it is kind of odd that the man that was speaking on it was white, which it really shouldn't matter the race, but.
It's such a big deal on this.
Because this is about, the whole part of the whole movement was about race. It's just kind of funny.
It's interesting. It's ironic. Like. the man behind the black man was white.
But we don't know anything about that man. What if he was raised by a black family? What if his wife was black?
Yeah.
What if, you know, he had...
Well, we could probably figure that out.
Yeah, we don't know anything about him. We didn't look him up further, so it might not be that far-fetched that he would be his right man, you know.
So the report, this whole report ends with a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. right after he won his Nobel Peace Prize. And it says, quoted, "History has thrust me into this position. It would both be immoral and a sign of ingratitude if I did not face my moral responsibility to do what I can in the civil rights struggle." End quote. Except history didn't thrust him into that shit. Levison did. Like, if Levison wasn't there, would we even know who Martin Luther King Jr. was?
Yes, because he would have another Levinson. That was just
The perfect storm, though.
Just who he chose to be his advisor.
I don't think he chose. I think Levison chose him. Like, I think because he was already so young when it all, like, he could have pulled any fucking preacher from the South and made him the poster boy.
Well, he was people did listen to him. He had a very good, public appeal. Like,
yes, yes.
He had public appeal.
He did.
He had, what do they call that? Curb appeal. Public appeal.
Yes, he did. He did. Curb appeal. You're right. But he looked pretty. He was very, and I'm sure that was part of Levison's mark it off.
Oh, yeah. You have a handsome, young man.
Yes, handsome, young. We just got off the JFK ride.
Also, he's very intelligent.
Ride.
He was educated.
Yeah, masters, all this stuff. And then also, JFK was the youngest president?
And he had that voice, too.
Yeah.
The MLK voice.
There's certain, check, mm-hmm. check.
Yeah.
That needs to be done. And he checked all the boxes, and I bet that's why. Mm-hmm. So, look at this. My King hoodie. It's for actually a middle school that one of my nephews went to, and a very long time ago. So he's still making his rounds now and influencing people.
Oh, yeah. There's San Diego has MLK Freeway. Mm-hmm. And
it's everywhere. Yeah.
He's everywhere.
Yep. So, okay. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. And
don't forget to share, like, and subscribe.
And look out for part number 2 of the new files that come out. Thank you guys so much. And email us at conspiraciesunlocked@gmail.com. Bye. Bye.